This is the Bulls Talk Podcast. I'm Casey Johnson, joined today by my NBC Sports Chicago teammate, Rob Schaefer. Coming up on the show, we're going to break down the Nets' beatdown of the Bulls. We are also going to preview another high-profile matchup against the Golden State Warriors on Friday. And we'll get into Derrick Jones Jr. injury and what it means for the roster moving forward.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
All right, Rob, we are taping this on another busy Thursday. It seems in this day and age in the NBA, a normal off day where there was no media access can turn into a busy day as usual. We've got Derrick Jones injury news. We've got 10-day roster signings. We've got rumors flying. We've got emails trading. We've got texts going. But we're going to start with the beatdown that was the Nets shellacking of the Bulls Wednesday night at the United Center, a raucous United Center, I might add. Well-lubricated United Center with that 9 p.m. tip, but that's too many adjectives. Rob, you were there, wrote about it for our website, NBCSportsChicago.com. What is your biggest takeaway from what was obviously a very lopsided loss?
Yeah, I think my biggest takeaway is the Nets made a statement to a degree. I don't think you can say that they're going to be 25 to 30 points better than the Bulls for the rest of the season or the playoffs. Obviously, the Bulls still have that top spot in the Eastern Conference. That's well earned. They've already won the season series against the Nets. That's well earned. But it was clear that with their three-headed monster, quote unquote, as DeMar DeRozan put it, of Kyrie Irving, James Harden, and Kevin Durant, fully operational for only the second game of the season for those three, it was clear that they, again, as DeMar DeRozan said, had a little bit of vengeance, had a little bit of a statement-making mentality on their minds. I mean, from the beginning of the game, and the first thing we should hit on is pregame and through warmups and through the starting lineup introductions and through the first half, really until midway through the third quarter, the atmosphere in the United Center was unparalleled from anything that I've seen so far this season. There was a real buzz, especially the first quarter was highly entertaining. I think it was 38-31 Nets after one. Just some raucous crowd reactions to some of the highlights that were being made in that quarter. Bulls draw within two by halftime. Same thing there. And then really the dichotomy between that and from that, I think it was 71-71 at one point. And then there was a little bit of push and pull with 6 minutes left in the third quarter. It was 80-75 Brooklyn. And then they launch onto this 21-4 run by the end of the third quarter. They extend that into the fourth quarter. I believe we're leading 113-79 at one point. So it just almost in the blink of an eye, it was a completely different game. The life was completely sucked from the UC. And you could see that energy that the Nets had from the start, being, you know, guys up on the bench, getting up, standing. Like, they knew the gravity that this game had because they're second in the East and they're going up against the up-and-coming ascendant Bulls who have that top spot, have beaten them a couple times this season. There was clearly a personal aspect to this one, even though Kyrie Irving didn't play well, even though the Bulls are still missing some of their key defensive cogs, Alex Caruso, Javonte Green, Derrick Jones Jr. goes out in the first minute. The Nets, even without LaMarcus Aldridge, Nick Claxton, Joe Harris, like they, you know, neither of these teams are personnel-wise where they're going to be, you would hope, towards the end of the season. But I think the Nets did make a statement. It was a little bit of a reminder. I don't think we need to overreact and say the Bulls are frauds, the Bulls aren't contenders, anything like that. You know, it's one game in the grand scheme of things, and they did hang in for 2.5 quarters before that snowball effect took hold. But to me, it is a little bit of maybe wake-up call is too strong, but a reminder that even as the Bulls are in this well-deserved top spot in the Eastern Conference for now, they're still probably, when we talk about true championship equity, deep playoff contention, they are still probably in that 1B tier until proven otherwise, with the Nets and the Bucks being kind of the established favorites. I think most reasonable Bulls fans, and obviously us, I think we all knew that, but that was maybe a harsh reminder, but was a little bit of a reminder of that at the UC on Wednesday. So a little bit of a demoralizing end, I would say, just based on the atmosphere being sucked out of the United Center a little bit. But a really, really fun beginning, a fun game through the first half. And now the key for the Bulls, as they hit on postgame, is to own the beatdown that they got and respond to it. They've lost big before this season. They've always or they've typically shown a capacity to respond to it. Now they've just got to do that again with, I should be, you know, be sure to say, another little brutal stretch of schedule coming up here. Obviously, the Warriors on Friday. You know, that home road back-to-backs are always tough in Boston on Saturday. Then you've got Milwaukee and Cleveland next week. There's ample opportunity against stiff competition to respond. Now the Bulls are going to have to do that.
Yeah, and multiple things to me can be true at once, right? I mean, on the one hand, you don't want to overreact to this loss. You know, the perspective I would use is Alphonso McKinney was guarding somebody in the G a month ago and was guarding Kevin Durant last night. So you don't want to overreact, but you also want to properly react, right? And to me, you know, what Billy talked about post-game was so spot on. There was a moment, and I tweeted this in real time, where I think the Nets were almost up 30 at that point, and they're beating, you know, Blake Griffin's on the floor beating the Bulls to loose balls. That's been the Bulls' identity and the Bulls' MO throughout this season. You can't have that happen, and I agree with you. It was definitely, for me, it was more of a statement from the Nets' end than the Bulls' end, because we kind of know who the Bulls are. But, you know, to me, this was the Nets reminding everybody who they can be. And that's a big difference. And Billy also alluded to that, you know, that, you know, where the Bulls sit in the standings, there comes a responsibility with that. And that responsibility is, you know, having championship habits on every possession, getting back in transition, rebounding the ball, taking care of the ball, not fouling jump shooters. And that can apply to everybody on the roster. Now, I like the standard he's setting, but at the end of the day, it's still Alphonso McKinney guarding Kevin Durant. I'm not hating on Alphonso McKinney or singling him out. I'm just using that as an example. Fantastic story, good worker, good athlete, has played in the NBA Finals for the Golden State Warriors. However, comma, he's, you know, the fourth string power forward, and Billy even acknowledged has not had many practice minutes at power forward for a Bulls team that has seen three power forwards go down. So, you know, I think we're in agreement. You want to take what is important from this game, but you also don't want to have it wash away the accomplishments that have been made to this point.
And we should acknowledge, and I did acknowledge it a little bit, but we should hit on the fact that the Bulls were missing three pretty important defensive pieces in Alex Caruso and Javonte Green and Derrick Jones Jr. I don't think any single one of them or even the trio make up for how big of a deficit that got to be at one point in the 30 to 35 point range early in the fourth quarter. I don't think any of them or any combination of them changes the results of that game. But, and we talked about this a little bit on our last show, not wanting to overreact to the defensive quote unquote slippage until Caruso is back, maybe even Javonte's back. And we kind of can see where this group kind of stabilizes. Cause right now they've been on a little bit of a defensive slide. They're probably not this bad defensively, but also maybe they weren't quite, they're not going to be quite as good as they were early in the season, all season. But that was definitely a factor. Like you just saw, you mentioned the McKinney thing, Casey, you saw when Iodesumu gets into early foul trouble, the Bulls just couldn't keep the Nets off the foul line and out of transition. You just saw like subtly those little areas of impact, even as they were hanging in the game, that being a couple perimeter defenders short had on them. And then obviously those little things added up to a huge avalanche in the third quarter. Again, I'm not saying it makes all the difference. It is a subtle factor. And, you know, there are all the ripple effects too, right? The Nets shoot 58%. They play a lot in isolation. Not many live ball turnovers to come by. The Bulls, save for a few first half highlights, really couldn't get out in transition. And then in the third quarter, the offense stagnates too. And then, you know, like I said, once the ball gets rolling there, it was tough to overcome this Nets operation. I mean, 138 points, that's a season high for a Bulls opponent. Like you said, they're just flashing. And Kyrie didn't even play particularly well. I mean, he 4-10 shooting, missed a couple open looks, 9 points. So they are still the Death Star. You know, this is something we knew, but to see them full strength, in terms of their big three, not up and down the roster completely, but to see them fire on all cylinders in that way, like I said, just a reminder of what type of terrifying ceiling this team can have if they are able to get whole come playoff time.
It was actually a 38-point deficit because I was preparing the old 40-point deficit alert tweet, which is remarkable as a quick aside here that the previous night, I had done both a 30-point advantage alert and a 40-point advantage alert in the Pistons game, and then did the 30-point deficit alert, but was preparing the 40-point deficit alert. My little bad Twitter routine that I've started there.
And KC, and KC, we went. KC,
the fans are tired of, but go ahead.
We went from the largest margin of victory for a Bulls game this season, 46-point win over Detroit, to a 26-point loss to Brooklyn that tied for their second largest margin of defeat to that Pacers 32-point loss. And it looked like it might beat that Pacers loss for a while, but garbage time helped them out a little bit. So that
Matt Thomas just goes to show
you. Yeah, you go from the basement of the Eastern Conference to the championship contention tier, and it looks a little different.
All right. Well, so like the Bulls, we will move on from the Warriors loss, and we're going to – I'm sorry, the Nets loss, and we're now going to preview the Warriors game, because for a second straight night, a high-profile – or I'm sorry, second straight game, a high-profile opponent, another nationally televised game. But if you're smart, you're going to be listening to Adam Amin and Stacey King on the NBC Sports Chicago call, because we have the game as well. I know you want your hot sauce along with, Steph Curry jumpers on the side. So we'll start with that, because unfortunately, from my perspective, that's all we're going to see are the Steph Curry jumpers on the side. No Klay Thompson, not official, but, you know, Steve Kerr has all but said he's not going to play in back-to-backs, and he did play Thursday night in Milwaukee. No Draymond Green, who's not even on the trip at this point for the Warriors. So disappointing. You'd like to see these teams at full strength, particularly when the Bulls are having the season that they're having. DeMar DeRozan has said as much. But the Warriors are still a fantastic story, with Curry obviously leading the way, playing at an MVP level, although that picture is getting more crowded than maybe earlier in the season when the Bulls were out in San Francisco and lost to the Warriors to open their West Coast trip. What are you most looking forward to seeing or watching in terms of the matchup tomorrow night, Rob?
Yeah, I think it's just another one of these measuring stick games, these barometer games. I think Brooklyn was one. Obviously, Klay and Dre. I know the Bulls probably would prefer to stack themselves up against this Warriors team, to match themselves up with them closer to full strength. I think a lot of Bulls fans, too, are kind of eager to see how they match up against these opponents full strength. As much as, you know, the Nets, you know, Harden and Kyrie were questionable until game time, them playing leads to that, you know, drastic margin of defeat that the Bulls had the other night. But at the end of the day, you'd almost, you know, for a regular season game in January, you'd almost rather have that information and know where you need to work and improve, just given where the Bulls want to go. That's a little bit more of a valuable experience. Still, this Warriors team, second in the West, have been, you know, they have had the best record in the league for a lot of this season. They've really transformed themselves with, you know, obviously Steph playing at the level that he has, although he has been in a little bit of a downswing lately. I was going to pull up his game logs to get a full picture of kind of the shooting slump that he's been in. You know, maybe he's coming out of it, and maybe he will break out of it against the Bulls. But in his last six games is the random number that I picked here. Steph averaging 21.5 points, 7.2 assists, shooting 34.2% from the field and 29% from three. So the slightest of slumps that happens to any shooter, even the greatest shooter of all time, we'll see, you know, if that trend persists or if he snaps out of it against the Bulls. Obviously, they'll be leaning on him a ton without Klay and Dre. But really, just generally, you know, this Warriors team, I believe their victory over the Bulls in San Francisco earlier this season is tied with that Nets game on Wednesday for their largest loss of the season, 26-point margin of victory. We remember that game as being a relative rout, especially in the second half. So, you know, how the Bulls respond to that earlier season beating, you know, they talked about how the Nets losing the first two of that season series was going to lead them to come into Chicago with vengeance on their mind. Do the Bulls have that same mentality going up against the Warriors? Add in the fact that they want to, you know, wipe the sour taste of their mouth out of their mouths from the Nets game. And I think it's an interesting test of obviously the Bulls, you know, a status matching up against one of the league's preeminent contenders. It's also another test of their resilience, kind of bouncing back from the Nets loss and that Warriors loss early in the season. A good opportunity in a couple different respects. I too am disappointed, especially not to see Klay play, because he's only been a couple games back here. Definitely made sure to catch his return. It's been great to see him back. You know, he's obviously finding his footing, but it looks like he's played pretty well and has pretty much met every expectation one could reasonably have. But it seems like the Warriors chose that the front end of their back-to-back, which has them in Milwaukee tonight to play him. One other thing, this just crossed my mind actually, and this was on our this was a up on a graphic on our broadcast during the Pistons game. The Bulls are now 8-0 against opponents who are on the second night of a back-to-back this season. That's an NBA best record. Warriors, as good of a team as they are, as great a team as they are, coming off that back-to-back, there's another thing that the Bulls could potentially take advantage of and try to get back on the right track, especially, as I mentioned, with Boston, Cleveland, and Milwaukee due up over the course of the next few games. It would be a nice little palate cleanser if they could notch a quality win on Friday. We'll see if they're able to do it.
Yeah, well, that lost the Warriors out in San Francisco to start that West Coast trip, also a nationally televised game. So
there you go.
Those four letters have not been kind to the Bulls this season. We'll see if that Friday night.
And that reminds me, there's another nationally televised game, the Memphis game. There's another team.
That's only three letters, though. And I'm having fun with other stations because we're the exclusive rights holders to Bulls games. But shout out to ESPN and TNT. They do fantastic
there work. You go.
NBA.
There you go.
So that was just another anomaly, you know, game. But I will say we always, as far as Klay Thompson, because I, like you, am very disappointed we will not be seeing him at the United Center, or I should say seeing him play at the United Center. We'll always have that 14 three-point game, man. That was I will remember that game for all time. I don't have the stat in front of me. It was some ridiculous thing where he had the ball for like 21 seconds for those 14 three-pointers in like seven dribbles. He was so open. That's all I remember is he was so open he could tell the seams before shooting on most of those, and he's as knocked out of a shooter as you'll find in this league. So that was an all-time memory on the beat.
There you go. Well, those you know, the Bulls hope those days are behind them. I guess you won't see Clay, but for Steph at least.
Yeah, there you go. And you know what would help in that – limiting the three-pointers is Alex Caruso, but like Derrick Jones Jr., although we have not officially seen an injury report for tomorrow's game, but Billy Donovan all but ruled Alex Caruso out for Friday night. He's been in the health and safety protocols. Derrick Jones Jr. Is going to be out for an extended period. Weeks is, you know, the early word with his knee injury that he suffered in the first minute of that Nets loss. So, man, you know, Javonte Green is still weeks away. So, you know, the injuries are piling up here for the Bulls. And I know that's the theme of this season. But it does raise the question, you know, does this alter management's view of the February 10th trade deadline? Do they feel compelled to make a move, you know, because of all the bodies that are in and out of the lineup? The name still most prominently linked to the Bulls is Jeremy Grant. We've covered that on the podcast here. At some point, we're going to have a trade deadline special and get deep in the weeds on those possibilities. I did report today that the word around the league from my sources that I've talked to, and I've heard this from several places, which is why I finally threw a line in there about it, is that, you know, maybe it's coincidental that Billy Donovan recently called Kobe White a winning player, but certainly sounds like from the people that I talked to that the Bulls intend on keeping Kobe White. I mean, I just said in a mailbag that I hate the word untouchable. I mean, obviously, if the Grizzlies offered Ja Morant for Kobe White, I'm going to guess the Bulls would say yes to that trade. But short of that, they're certainly valuing what he's bringing to them. And the indications are for right now, they intend on keeping him. Things always can change as we get closer to the deadline, but I heard it enough and from enough people that I felt strong enough to report it. So I just threw a lot against the wall there, Rob. What do you want to take away from my smorgasbord of thoughts there?
Well, just how brutal of a development the Derrick Jones Jr. injury is. You know, I thought he would be a pretty steady rotation player for this team this season. I don't know that anybody, you could say this about a lot of players who have made big contributions to the Bulls this season. I don't know if anybody anticipated him playing as important a role as he has, especially, you know, since Javonte and Caruso went down, starting a power forward. His length, you know, for a team that's lacked size, his length, his athleticism, you know, on the offensive end, you see it with the dunks, the lob catches. He's actually shooting a pretty on low volume, but shooting a pretty decent percentage from three this year in the limited attempts that he does get up. He's had utility on that end. Obviously, he's been a pretty essential, you know, contributor of defending on the interior and the perimeter, on the glass. You know, he's a guy that on any given night could get in foul trouble, but for the most part, especially with how many forwards the Bulls have down right now, he would have been important to continue bridging until you can get guys like Caruso and Javonte back. I do think based on what that injury looked like, and I hate more than anything speculating, you know, just based off of what it looks like as a guy goes down, as a guy is, you know, helped off the floor, it looked like it could be worse than, you know, a 4 to 6 week or multiple week injury. It looked like it could have been worse than that. So I guess that's a positive thing to take away from it. But the negative is, as you mentioned earlier in the show, Casey, the Bulls are down for the third time this season. They're starting power forward. It seems like Alex Caruso's return is around the corner, but he still just hasn't gotten over that hump in terms of clearing protocols yet. It'll be interesting to see what direction Billy Donovan turns in terms of filling that power forward slot. Obviously, it was, you know, 20 minutes of Alphonso McKinney against the Nets. Troy Brown Jr. has had his role increase over the last few weeks. You know, obviously, Troy Brown Jr. is a little bit limited, but I think he's played pretty well with the increased opportunity he's gotten recently. Obviously, this team has played small a lot this year. Upticks for Ayo Dosunmu, for Kobe White, you know, playing small, more DeRozan at the four. Like all of those things are going to combine to, you know, try to make up what they're losing here. But DeMar talked about this last night, just how much they're missing. And maybe this doesn't apply as much to Derrick Jones Jr. I think it does a little bit, but just how much they're missing the energy and the kind of heart and soul of the team nature of guys like Caruso and Javante. Derrick Jones Jr. is another guy when he's playing well that really brings a dose of, you know, pop, obviously with his athleticism and then his energy and activity defensively. So the Bulls are really, really going to miss that. Obviously, Patrick Williams is already out and his return isn't yet in sight. So whether it affects their calculus ahead of the trade deadline, I'm not sure. I mean, I know that, you know, this is obviously going to strain their depth and, you know, the front court situation a lot. I don't know if Derrick Jones Jr. going down for as long as he goes down probably drastically affects what the Bulls were looking to do, because even when it was, you know, Javante Green starting at the four, it was something where if the Bulls are going to make a deep playoff run, they probably can't afford to be set at that power forward slot. They're probably going to have to go look and explore potential upgrades. You know, whatever size upgrades those are remains to be seen. But I was never a believer that, as much as I love, you know, the way Javante Green has played this season, I was never necessarily a believer that that was a sustainable model to, you know, to make a deep playoff run. Patrick Williams, you'd obviously love that to work out, but coming off a serious injury, who knows how much ramp up he's going to have before the postseason. I don't know if you can firmly rely on that either. So maybe it dials up the urgency a little bit. But for me, you know, and we've said this a lot about this management regime and as bold and aggressive as they've been, they've also been pretty calculated too. I would be surprised if a string of injuries like this that only have, you know, the week to week modifier on them, or multiple week modifier on them, I'd be surprised if they allow that to drastically alter their thinking. Maybe it does dial up the urgency a little bit, though, because it's certainly going to be tough sledding, again, against tough competition with the forward rotation, which is probably power forward is probably the thinnest spot on the roster, even when they're fully healthy. To now have that strained as much as it is going to be a real problem.
Yeah, and an important point that I made in a column I posted at our website, NBCSportsChicago.com, and on the My Teams app is, you know, Derrick Jones Jr. to me does not really affect his trade value if you want to take a big swing, because, you know, any team that's trading for him is doing it for the expiring salary. So that stands. And also, he's going to be back at some point. You know, it's going to be a week to week. It's a week's injury, not a month's injury. So I agree with you. It doesn't really impact too much the thinking. It's just, you know, doesn't make sense for the organization, both short and long term, to make a big move. We'll see as we get close to the trade deadline. I got one last one for you before we wrap things up here. And I'm actually trying to stall to get the latest injury report to see if the Bulls update. But I actually do have a legit question. Who's your fifth starter against the Warriors? What's your guess? I've got a good one. You want me to go first or you?
You go first.
I think they slide DeMar to the four and start Troy Brown Jr.
Ooh, interesting. I was going to guess Ayo. Slide Zach to the three. But you could be right. I don't know. We'll see. That's interesting. Whatever way they go, they're going to be small, right? So
and
thin is right. But to the Kobe White point, you know, I know they've slid him into the starting lineup at various times this year, primarily when Lonzo Ball was out. He's been so good in the kind of spark plug bench role, not only as a scorer, but as a playmaker, that I would imagine he stays there. We'll see. I mean, we're just speculating at this point.
I guess that was probably more obvious than the pretzel logic that I used to get to mine. Because you're right, Kobe could start at two and Zach could slide to three. I mean, they've done that multiple times this year, have they not?
They have. Yeah. So actually, now that I'm talking that out, maybe that does make sense to do. I think those are your three logical candidates, though. And, you know, we'll find out. I think there's a reasonable case for all of the above. The thing about Troy, the thing about Io, you don't want those guys, because we saw what happened in the Nets game when guys got in foul trouble early. Those are two guys that can be at a risk for getting in foul trouble early. Kobe White is the same way. So yeah, we'll see against the Warriors. The beauty of the Warriors team, they're a team that likes to play small a lot too. So they should be able to match up in that respect. Now the danger of a Warriors team is that they are as good as anybody, if not historically good at playing small based on their track record. So it'll be an interesting matchup for sure. I think those three are the three I would zoom in on. Now that we're talking about it, I think if I had to guess, I'd probably go Kobe just based on the track record. You're right. They have turned to that multiple times.
This is where we're going to need Tony maybe to edit out the entire last segment, since I was talking out of my side of my mouth and then realized it's Kobe White. I'm just joking. Kobe White is probably the most logical. So regardless, it will happen on Friday night. We are looking forward to covering that game and writing more articles for you at NBCSportsChicago.com and the My Teams app. Rob, before we get up out of here, do you have anything else you'd like to close with?
Yeah, because we're on YouTube this week, or this day, on this day. What's that over your left shoulder there, Casey? Walk us through. I'm going to other shoulder. I guess your right shoulder. It's my left. I'm going to play Rick Carlisle here for a second. Ask what's going on in the background there.
That red thing?
Yeah.
So my wife actually painted that, and it's actually more like abstract art, and she painted a long time ago, early in our relationship. And do you want to know the title of it?
Red. Maroon.
My life in hell with KC. It's become a family joke, and I'm glad you got a laugh out of it. But really, we're a happily married couple, so let's not get into therapy session right here on YouTube. We'll talk about this. But yes, that is the title of that fine piece of art by my wife.
That is great. If you're a podcast listener, I encourage you to go pull up the YouTube machine, and don't stay too long. Don't look at us for too long, but check out that fine piece of work. Abstract is definitely the word I would use for it. That's definitely apt.
And the Rick Carlisle reference is a deep in the weeds one that is too long to get into right now. But let's just say that the Rick has got some art history background and is also intrigued by potential pieces of art. And he and I had a what's the word? Off-putting, jarring.
I was going to say spirited. I was going to give you guys credit. I was going to say spirited.
Unlikely conversation on that subject matter during a media session earlier this season. So maybe we can delve into that some other.
When he's watching tape of these Bulls, he's staying tuned for the Casey Johnson WebEx hits. We love to see it.
We need to end this Bulls Talk podcast. We certainly hope you enjoyed listening to it. It is on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. As always, subscribe if you like the show. Feel free to rate and review us. New episodes are ready every Tuesday and Friday morning. We will catch you next time. Thanks for listening.